I'm 57. The 29th of April, 2010, to the 28th of April, 2011. Above. The Seas of Memory by Jackie Clulow. A reflection on my 57th year, April 2011. My thumb stung as I stabbed myself yet again. But I was determined to stitch the sparrow correctly. A little brown bird, I recalled a children's storybook with the tale of how the sparrow got his bib and that the flock at Corley Services on the M1 had appreciated the tea cake crumbs I tossed them on a chilly April morning in 2010. Cross-stitch is just less practical, darling. And I learned that 50 years ago. The hoop of remembrance will take me 23 years to complete, with 5 memories from each year to be pictured. If I'm still here and my fingers are up to the task by the time I am 80, if not, I will leave pictorial instructions to be followed by an embroiderer. And so I shall cast a net across the seas of memory to collect my favourite 5. How to Be an Artist was published in May with $20,000 as its replacement title. It is tiring answering the same questions all over again, but I can always make something new up. Travelled to Stockholm, enjoyed chatting to Agnetha whilst putting up 40 posters. Also got the oven gloves out and baked cakes, distributed via a small cake circle. I'm trying to find the right DMC colour for lettering to represent the foundry. My festering anger for planners, hedge funds and a chain of hotels allegedly full of art replacing an existing place of art is not good for my blood pressure. I remember trying to rationalise that new starts are always needed for new adventures and the bar was drunk dry in our final night. I set aside the hoop to crunch into an apple and ploughman's lunch. At Bestival in July on the Isle of Wight, I gathered the 17 to perform the nightclubbing score for the first time. We were billed as Bill Drummond's The 17. And the recording played over the Tannoy on Sunday before its deletion. It was glorious. The 17 tried to persuade me to stay up past 3 a.m. to see the dawn. But my pot of tea was calling before midnight. I headed to my stony storyland, the Curfew Tower, for the 7th annual event in August. This year, Catalyst Arts were in charge. Chopping onions is meditative. Tracy Moberly's curries all start with this process, and so she fed the throng. Nathan Carruthers won with his Curfew Tower Card Tower piece. And its title of 45 made me smile inside and wonder if he'd done his Drummond research. During the next month, being a composer in residence at the Mittersill Composers Forum was a hefty chunk of time, nerve-wracking and fantastic. I did panic about not having actual scores to hand to the conductor, and my lack of German language skill made things difficult. I chose the 17 from the 4's attendees and performed several of the new Scharkenhorf scores. However, the sore knees I received from climbing an Alp were worth it for creating score 358. On the mountain, and for the divine view. November saw the rescheduled performance of Two Tribes, at the Salford Lads Club, with local boxing clubs twinned with a performance by tribes in Papua New Guinea. December took me long haul on a trip to China, where I made a bed and had a most painful shave. Ruby and silver threads are needed for the straight razor icon. Checking the calendar to see what's in store for me from January 2011, I've got some new red strings to pin across the A2 planner. Threads from the past and future projects. Daft plans and hard outcomes. My sculptures springing to life. From cake in a stranger's hand to graffiti in twin cities. The 17 feature heavily this year, with soaring, groaning, chorus and togetherness. I'm still trying to get to grips with creating my own cross-stitch patterns and have resorted to drawing vertical lines in my black and red notebook to create graph paper and pencil in the X's for stitches. At least the Land Rover is boxy, but I'll need to top-stitch the headlamp and door detailing in last. I feel comforted by the soothing cacophony of rain on the Land Rover roof. My mobile cocoon is following the white lines on the motorway pilgrimage to Spaghetti Junction. No shells to collect in this country, just another wooden drink stirrer. I imagine the heft of the roller handle while I reach as high as I can on the concrete pillar to daub the first line of score one. Imagine waking up tomorrow morning and all music has disappeared. The thrill of sign writing in plain sight to the roar of traffic doesn't get old. Revisiting my embroidery, I'm still struggling with how to depict the Haitian earthquake. A crumbled building? A Richter scale graph? It happened before I started my hoop of remembrance, but has influenced work in this following year. I often pondered the existence of God, but discovered that some saw me as God of destruction, prophet of doom, an uncomfortable mantle given to me rather than one of my own self-given personae. I decided against including the prophet of doom in my introduction to Claudel's book, Imagine. The launch went ahead in the UK, where there are some people with spare cash. I flipped some pancakes, sold his T-shirts. My 4 days in Jerusalem and the Holy Lands was intense. A recce for the final performance by the 17. Despite travelling without a passport, managed to stay on the right side of the law. Got a shave, dreamt of sparrows, listened to sirens. My phone call to Agnetha led to new insights on the nature of control. I painted Imagine graffiti on the real Brooklyn Bridge this April in Newton Creek. Found a barber for a haircut. Another year closer to another milestone birthday, and I embroider my fifth icon, a railway bridge in DMC hashtag 301.
Below, on the benches by Michael Islip, as told to excellent Raymond. It was a quiet day in May 2010 when David Cameron was elected Prime Minister. People said they couldn't believe it, but I suppose it was inevitable. I was in the middle of a long stay in Brighton. The hotel I had been given was right on the beach. Outside it smelled not enough of the sea and too much of humans. A seagull often visited me when I sat on the benches on the seafront in the morning. I named him Nick Clegg. He was always hungry, although I don't know if he was any hungrier than any other seagull. People would jog along the seafront, and Nick Clegg and I would watch them. We wondered if they knew what we were thinking. People often asked me why I was in Brighton. I could never give them a good answer. I hated Brighton then, especially the lanes. None of the joggers seemed in pain. I watched their knees twist and clench as they slowly battled the wind on the promenade. Sometimes Nick Clegg would take off, fly into the wind, and slowly drift away. Seagulls understand much more than you would think. Once you strip away the squawking, the laughing, and the flapping, they are very intuitive. Nick Clegg could solve crimes if you needed him to. He taught me about kleptoparasitism. The Tories had done a deal with the Lib Dems so they could run the country. Everyone was doing whatever they could to hang on to power. It took me a long time to realize Nick Clegg was a carnivore. He killed a small bird for me. I didn't ask him to, but he wanted to prove himself. He knew that his place on the bench with me wasn't forever. That month was very dry. It hardly rained at all. I think that was why the smell in the mornings was so bad. Nick Clegg wanted to move out of his colony. I couldn't provide him with any help or guidance. What did I know about the prospects for a seagull living on his own? We planned to stay where we were for a while, even though I hated Brighton. Nick Clegg never told me how he ended up in Brighton. Probably the same reason I was in Brighton. I asked a jogger once how many people lived in Brighton, and he said he didn't know. Whenever we saw fishing boats, Nick Clegg would fly over to them as fast as he could. All his brothers and sisters and friends and enemies would fly with him. I couldn't see what had happened when they got close to the boats. When the sun started to set, it got cold. I would leave my hotel room to walk up and down the lanes, even though I hated them the most. I never saw Nick Clegg after dark. It seemed like the earth was talking that year. Earthquakes and volcanoes and destruction are everywhere. Nick Clegg would ask me about it, as he could feel it when he flew. He could feel it when he flew out to the fishing boats, but it never stopped him from flying. And that year, humans were hurting the earth with more energy than ever. Oil leaks and mine collapses. Nick Clegg would weep as I told him about the millions of tons of oil pumped into the ocean. One day I decided that I had to leave Brighton. It wasn't even really a decision. I hated Brighton and knew I had to go somewhere else. Somewhere with more cover and more shade. I didn't tell Nick Clegg right away. I wondered if I should ask him to come with me. How far away from the sea could seagulls live? Nantwich is 33 miles from the sea. We were watching the joggers on a Sunday afternoon when I told Nick Clegg about my plans. He didn't say anything for a while. After a minute, a heavy-headed man ran past, and my friend flew at him. Wings flapping and hissing, the man screamed and waved his arms to protect himself, and Nick Clegg suddenly flew up into the wind and drifted away. I didn't see Nick Clegg the next day. I sat out on the benches by the sea. I didn't mind being on my own, and it gave me a chance to think about the fishing boats a bit more. He came to see me the day after. I thought there might have been a fuss, but there was no screeching or fighting. He told me he was sad, and he was still thinking of leaving his colony. But what could I do? My last few days in Brighton were quiet. The days were getting longer, and it rained a little. I think I saw Nick Clegg once out by the bus stop, but he didn't stop to talk to me. I needed some advice about what I should do next. "We can't go on like this," I remember reading somewhere. As I packed my bag in the hotel room, the TV news played more sad stories. I remembered as many as I could to tell Nick Clegg about them if we ever talked again. The wind coming past the seafront benches was strong the day I left. I didn't sit for long.